Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, Mobby Wines celebrates May as Michigan Wine Month. We discuss how. We talk about the book A Writing Marriage, a unique blend of memoir and fiction. Photographer Diane Burdick joins in to talk about her solo exhibition at Fountain Street Church. We talk about the PAD Project and their fight for menstrual equity. And the Numero Group is at Art Rat Gallery today from 1 to 7 p.m.
We'll get your big little ASAP. Michael and Peter Lang, co-owners and brothers of Mobby Sparkling Wines, started Big Little in 2011 to put their own spin on Leelanau-grown wines. And here we are. Tasting room has opened, and there's a Big Little, well, bottle in my hand, as is Mike and Peter in the house. We'll call you Michael. We'll call you Peter. Who's the older brother?
Michael.
Michael's the older and wiser, and Peter, you're the fun.
I wouldn't say wiser.
Okay.
I would say better looking.
Okay,
though.
All right. Well, I'm not going there. You could be twins. There we are. Well, we have spoken to you before, Mike and Peter. I'm glad that you are here as well. You can't beat a Northern Michigan, can you, Peter?
Can't beat it.
No. Beautiful.
Absolutely not. Well, actually, it's pretty cold right now. We wish it was a little nicer, but the grapes are still dormant, which is good.
Yeah, I was going to say that could be a whole different conversation on that. All right, Mike, let's get into, you know, we throw the name Mobby out, but we want to focus on Big Little. Tell me about the concept.
Yeah, so we partnered with Larry Mobby in 2008, and shortly after that, we wanted to put our own spin on Northern Michigan wines, so we launched Big Little Wines, and that was in 2011, and then we opened our tasting room in 2013, and all the while working at Mobby and developing that business. And we've never really, you know, gone on the road to focus on telling the Big Little story, so that's why we're here today. And we're rebranding our tasting room as a treehouse. It's got that kind of vibe to it. It's an intimate space where we're welcoming guests, and they can spill out onto the lawn overlooking the vineyard, and it's right adjacent to Mobby, so people can visit one spot and hit two different tasting rooms. So our wines are mostly non-sparkling, and Mobby's sparkling, so we've got basically anything you could ever want as far as wine goes on one property.
Nice. Peter, why the name Big Little?
Well, we are brothers, so one of us, that would be Mike, is the older, I'll say. So he's the big brother, and I'm the little brother, and then I think I have probably at least a half inch of height on him, so if we're using that measurement, then I am the big brother, and Mike's the little brother. So it's big little, big brother, little brother, and then each of the wines is the names are based on childhood memories that we share and we think are relatable for kind of everyone, maybe with a couple of exceptions like the mixtape. Now the 21-year-olds that are rolling into the tasting room have no idea what that is. But
yeah, here we are. Let's just not go there. This I have in my hand, I mean, mixtape.
Yeah,
blend
that's
white.
The one. Yeah, yeah. That's a blend, as it were. Has so to be.
Big Little is your brand, but you have the different types.
Correct.
According to the grape.
Yeah, some of the other, this is a blend mixtape. It's a lot of Alsatian varieties like Riesling, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Noir grow well in Northern Michigan. This is a blend of some of those. And then we've got other wines called Driftwood, Treehouse, Dune Climb, C3,
Lightning
Pinot,
Bug.
Lightning Bug, and the like.
Nice. Who comes up with the names, Peter?
It's a collaborative effort.
That's an important question.
They've all happened to be, you know, with, I guess, the exception of like a C3 Pinot, they've all happened to be sort of compound words. So mix tape, under dog, dune, climb. So we've kind of just stuck with that trend. I think that was just a coincidence when we started and we've continued. And so, but like I said, yeah, they're all just like memories that Mike and I share. And I think a lot of people can connect with, which is what wine is really all about, is just connecting.
To making new ones. And remind me, I missed this. Why mixtape?
So it's a vineyard blend. So like a mixtape is a blend of, you know, thoughtfully arranged tracks. The wine is made up of a vineyard blend of several different varieties.
Thoughtfully arranged.
Yes, that too. All right, when I'm up north, where's your tasting room?
So we're 5 miles south of Sutton's Bay, about 10 miles north, just off 22. There's signage on 22 leading you our way. And on the web, we are biglittlewines.com. And we can find out more information as well at mobby.wine. Both will tell you about Big Little.
Yes. Can we find your Big Little here in West Michigan?
We can. We're not allowed to you know, shout out certain retailers, but our wines are here in West Michigan at select retailers, and we're looking to spread the word.
Yes. And how much does, I guess, Peter, at this point, we're in, you know, not quite midway May, but getting there. How, of course, May is wine month, right? So there's that.
Michigan wine month.
How important does the weather matter for, you're dormant now, but
yeah, things are waking up for sure. The sap's flowing. We're finishing up our pruning at this time. And it's really just a matter of weeks or maybe even days before we see bud break. So the cold weather has been good in that it slows things down, and we've had a lot of frosts over the last 2 weeks. There's probably been half the nights have had hard frosts, and so we're fortunate because things are still kind of tucked away. The buds haven't burst yet, but yeah, any day now, and then we're hoping things warm up and dry off, and we have a beautiful growing season.
Any other brothers and sisters in the family, Mike?
No, just us.
Oh, okay, this is just all about you guys. Your parents are proud. There we are. What else do we need to know?
We're doing a lot of events this summer, more than we normally do on June 20th. So we're rebranding the tasting room as the Treehouse, and we've got Camp Big Little, so an adult wine camp, basically. June 20th. July 18th, August 15th, those are dates for Camp Big Little. You can check those out on our website. And then we've got a dinner in September with Abra Barons of Southwest Michigan, Grainer Farms. And we are going to be here in November for the Grand Rapids Food and Wine Festival. And then also TC Wine and Food Festival up in August. That's great. That's the second year for that. So lots going on, and hoping to connect with your listeners.
That's why we are simply the messenger. You and Brother Peter, again, creating many memories growing up, and you share those with us in your Big Little, and I'll take your mixtape, blended wine. I'll get out my old mixtapes and listen to a little Michael Jackson, Pretty Young Thing. I can remember them all. Scary.
You still have a tape deck hooked up?
No. No, we'd have to go to the antique store to buy that. Although my Walkman may come back to life. Oh, that would be a visual. All right, one more time, best way to find out more information.
BigLittleWines.com and Mobby.wine.
And you can find us on Instagram. BigLittleWines is the handle, and on Facebook as well.
All right. Did you ever tussle when you were kids?
Once in a while, but, you know, it was pretty friendly between us, I would say, on the whole. Yeah.
Good. All right. Carry on. Mike and Peter Lang on behalf of Big Little, L-A-I-N-G. Take care.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
She wears many hats today. Let's put the hat of writing on the list. Authoring, A Writing Marriage, Lori Carlson Hijuelos on the line, a new memoir. She details her life with Oscar Hijuelos, the Pulitzer Prize author of the Mambo Kings play Songs of Love. Lots happening in your life. This memoir of a marriage deeply rooted in love, faith, and literary art. So I'll say congratulations. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning, and thank you very much.
Welcome. When did you meet your husband?
I met Oscar in 1981. In New York City at the Center for Inter-American Relations, where I had just begun a job out of graduate school.
Yes, those were the days, as they say. A Writing Marriage. How do you describe your work?
Well, it is a love letter to my extraordinary husband, and I would say that it is written in the vein of a sacramental, it's a sacramental tribute to my husband. I wrote the memoir in a cathedral, And I was inspired by what I was seeing and hearing at the church every day, and also what I was reading in my husband's opus, Blue Antiquity, 2,000 pages, of which I excerpted pieces here and there to accompany my recollections.
Yes, and it's not bad when Oscar became a global sensation as the first Latino author to win, what, the Pulitzer Prize for fiction?
Yes, he was the first Latino to win a Pulitzer Prize. So overnight, Oscar made history, and his life changed dramatically, and international rights were sold to his marvelous novel. And invitations were coming in from all over the world to speak, and movie rights were sold. It was one of those incredibly rare moments in an artist's life. They happen so infrequently.
So here we are, a writing marriage. Before I get into more of your themes, how much of a role did Oscar play in this memoir?
Oh, he was there with me every step of the way. I felt as though he was sitting next to me as I was writing. So not only was he the inspiration for writing this book, but he was my cheerleader and my advocate, always there.
Yes. This unique blend of memoir and fiction does illuminate your life with Oscar, the power of writing to create and remake worlds and reveal the writer while reading your husband's final unpublished novel. Dig a little bit more deeply into that for me.
Well, this is Blue Antiquity is quite an unusual novel. Oscar began writing it when he was a fellow at the American Academy in Rome in the mid-1980s. He was taking notes already and worked on it all those decades until the day he died. He was working on it. It was a comprehensive view, fictionally presented, of what Oscar believed about life and death and eternity and love. And it was centered, it is centered, on a protagonist who is a scholar, whose area of expertise is the life of Christ. And so it was a very interesting experience to be writing my memoir in a cathedral where I was reminded of the life of Christ every day and reading Oscar's interpretations of those times. And it wasn't planned. I was in my hometown of Jamestown, New York, to look after my mother for a while. My mother is elderly, and I needed a quiet space in which to write, and the pastor of her church graciously gave me the library in the cathedral.
Again, it's called A Writing Marriage, written by Lori Carlson Hijuelos. Tell me about the hallmarks of a foundational marriage. What, the kind devoted to serving, nourishing, and empowering each other's? And what, cositas, the little things mark away that spouses treat each other? Expand.
Yeah, I called our marriage foundational because it was such a solid marriage based on shared values and a shared vision of what we wanted to do together as a couple. And I would say that mainly that was to contribute to society in whatever way we could. And in our lives, it was through our writing. I have devoted my career mainly to the youth of Latino immigrants. And that's where I put my passion and my energy and my focus. My entire career was trying to make known Latino writers in this country when very little was understood about the Latino population. And Oscar, through his art and through his magnificent literature, was trying to open people's eyes and I would say enlighten and elevate and beautify their days on this earth. So it was foundational in that way. I guess stewardship would come to mind, the word stewardship and service. And just trying to be everything that God intended us to be as a couple.
Thank you for that Tell me how writing has helped you deal with the profound grief and reality of widowhood.
Well, that's a very good question. I suppose in some ways it helped me because it brought me farther away from pain, oddly enough. It brought me closer to beauty and to making me realize all of the blessings that I have had in my life. I truly know that my marriage was special. It was unique. Our relationship was unique. And I found that writing about our marriage allowed me to understand it intellectually. And the suffering that I have experienced the last 12 years dissipated. So I suppose that's what I would say. It was a sieve through which I was able to extract the beauty and less pain.
As with birth comes death, yet the memories you keep certainly alive. And you what? Prefer the verb reconstruction, reconstructing. Reconstruction is what you are encountering?
Yes. Well, I felt that I had been torn apart when Oscar died. It was totally unexpected. We were so bound together. A friend said we were a double helix. We were just so bound. And I realized that we had created this third person together. And when he died, I was basically a mess of pieces. And healing is a word that is often used to describe a person's process after death to becoming whole, that one heals. But I didn't find that healing was at all an appropriate word for what I was experiencing. I was having to pick up pieces and reconfigure me and reconfigure my existence and reconfigure a life. And I'm not finished. I'm still in that process of trying to understand where I'm going from here and who I am now. And it's disconcerting. It's a very strange thing to go through.
Yes. And yet your words of wisdom, your story, I'm sure many can relate.
Oh, I'm certain of that. Yes. It's interesting. When Oscar passed away, I wanted to be a part of a group to talk about grief. But in my area, my community at the time in New York City, every time I reached out to a group, there were strictures about who could join the group. You either had to be over 65 or it had to be this and that kind of circumstance. And I didn't fit in any category. So I never became a member of a community in which you could discuss or talk about the pain that you were going through. That would have helped tremendously. I think Americans are not very good when it comes. I don't think they're very good at processing death. We're sort of about, well, the values that we are given in this society or the values that are highlighted have very little to do with pain. It's about getting and achieving and acquiring. But we really have to think more about the eternal path. And other societies seem to do that better than we do.
Well, yes, work to do, Americana. Yet, writing you continue to do, if you would. It's called A Writing Marriage, with excerpts from Blue Antiquity by Oscar Huelos. You, Lori Carlos Huelos, tell us how to find out more information.
Well, the book is published today, May 12th, and you can find the book online everywhere. At your local bookstore, you can order it. You can find it on Amazon, And I just hope that anyone who might have experienced loss and is continuing to experience loss would find comfort in my book.
Thank you, day by day, but thanks for contributing to many others and the way we live. You, Lori, take care to you. The book is A Writing Marriage. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Come visit Diane Burdick at Fountain Street Church. She has a solo exhibition, and we need to talk about it. I have books in my hand because many of those shots, I'm sure, from these books are on the wall. I call you a friend, award-winning Diane Burdick in the house. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Shelley. So nice to be here.
I always ask this question. When did you pick up your first camera?
Oh, my goodness. I think I was probably 11. And I don't remember what camera it was, but it's what we all had when we were 11. And I would go out and photograph, like, the little woods around our house and, you know, things like that. And I kind of carried it with me. But I bought my first big camera, as they say, when I was 17. And I haven't put it down since.
Very nice.
A Nikon.
A Nikon. There we are. I think I had one in those days as well, the big Well, anyway, yeah. I digress. So you fell in love with photography, I trust.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I love people, and I love to photograph people, but I also love the landscape. I just love to see things, and I love to investigate, find details everywhere I go, and I'm constantly looking for patterns and just kind of different points of view as I walk around a lot.
Wonderful. What's your niche, shall I say? Do you do it all?
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yes,
I try to do a lot, but in photography, especially for the show, I have a lot of hand-colored silver prints, and those are the prints made from the darkroom that I actually developed, printed myself, and then hand-colored by hand with colored pencils to do one of the books. And then I have a lot of color and black and white photographs. So I have a lot of variety, and they really did grow from these books that I was so lucky to have the opportunity to have published.
Yes. Let's get in, first of all, to what's happening Sunday.
Okay, Sunday is the reception. It's called the Good Earth exhibit, and it's at Fountain Street Church, and that's across from Grand Rapids Community College and the Grand Rapids Library. So it's kind of center city, and it's in the Keeler Lounge in their gallery, and it is from noon to 2 o'clock.
Yes, and for one who's never been to a solo exhibition, what's the this is a noon to two event?
Yeah, yep. It's the actual reception where there's going to be refreshment and probably some cookies and things like that. And lots of people can come in, and I'll be there, and I can talk to anybody that wants to know more information about the photos.
Yes. Are the photos for sale?
Yes, they are, except for one, which will always be mine. But yes, almost all of them are for sale, and I will have books for sale too.
Let's talk about some of the books. Which would you start with? You've brought three examples in.
Let's start with Listen to the Landscape. I have about seven books out, but these three are kind of like the ones where it's just all my photography. And Listen to the Landscape was is a wonderful collection of 28 hand-colored photos and coupled with haiku from our first poet laureate, Linda Nemec Foster. And so we collaborated on this, and I think I've got five of the actual imagery and haiku framed pieces in the show.
Yes. Here's Guardian. I rise from earth. I shelter all things you give me. I keep the secrets. A beautiful, looks like an old barn as
yep.
such.
Yeah, that barn was actually in the Poconos. I mean, still is, but the producers of CBS Sunday Morning own that barn. I know, just a little tidbit.
There's a little trivia question. There we are. All right, move on to another book.
Okay, then we've got Tasting and Touring Michigan's Homegrown Food, A Culinary Road Trip. And that is a beautiful book that I worked on with Jay Beeler. And we both did work at the Grand Rapids Press years ago. And we were at a friend's tea party. And a publisher was also at the party, and she came up to Jay and I and said, I want you two to work on a book I've always wanted to read.
And it's kind of your ultimate request.
Oh, my gosh. And I thought we both went, yes, we will. So that one took us about a year to actually write and photograph. And then the next year, it took that long to edit. I had 10,000 photos that I took, but it's the whole state of Michigan, and she probably had 10,000 words. But we worked on that. So that's a really wonderful book. It's all about food from Michigan and where it grows, and the chapters are awesome, like from the orchard, from the field,
yes,
from the dairy barn and pasture. We just had so much fun meeting the people and really photographing all the food. Michigan is second to California in agriculture production.
Another piece of trivia none of us should ever forget. And then you're all about the apple.
Yeah, and that actually was from the same publisher from Tasting and Touring. And that's based on the Kilcherman's Farm in Christmas Cove. And Phyllis Kilcherman wrote a little bit in the book, and she shared her recipes. And it's just an outstanding book where it really covers a glossary defining all these, so many apples, so many antique apples, their history, how they came to be, and wonderful recipes. And there's even information on which apples to use for what. Like, are they for crunching? Are they for applesauce or pie? And so that's up in the Leelanau Peninsula.
So did you take either of these pictures here?
Yes, I took them all. Yep.
How do you take a picture of an apple?
Well, that is a great question. You actually hope for an overcast day so you have even lighting, because otherwise there's high contrast. But then if there is, you not alter it, but just kind of edit it in Photoshop. And you can get close to apples, and once you do, you notice that so many apples are shaped differently. They all have different bark. They all have different leaves. Yeah, so
more
anyway.
Trivia. Yay! Did you do this front cover?
Yes, I did. Yeah, yep,
with the dew or the...
It's the dew the apples, these beautiful bright red apples, with the glistening dew on... showing with beautiful sunlight reflecting on them with a black background in the crate.
So back to Sunday, where your exhibition, the Good Earth solo exhibition.
Yeah. That holds about 35 pictures, and eight of them are quite large, maybe 3 to 4 feet. And then the rest are just a little bit smaller. And most of them have been in either Festival of the Arts or Art Prize, and a lot of them did take an award.
Yes, no, you have many on your mantle. Diane Burdick with us. You'll see her exhibit this Sunday, Fountain Street Church. I say 12 to 2. Is it open longer than that?
It's going to wind down, shortly after 2, but I believe you can come in about 9:30 because there is a service, a chapel service at 10 and 9:30 or 10, and then the actual service of the church is at 11.
Does your work stay there?
Oh yeah, it'll be there all summer till about Labor Day weekend, and then the next show will be Art Prize. And so in the summertime, the church is definitely open during service on Sunday, so that would be a good time to come in and see it again if you'd like.
All right, where does one start if they want to get into photography? I mean, there'll never be a Diane Burdick. But
everybody has a cell phone now with a camera, right? So it's sometimes not always about your toolbox that you carry, but it's how you see. So with your cell phones, everybody can take a picture. Just don't always forget. Think about the detail of a picture. Think about maybe a close-up, a wide range. Tell a story. Next time you go on your walk, tell a little story about your walk and try to get all the different details about your walk. Think about that.
Yes. Now I can get a hold of your books, right?
Yeah, you can contact me, or at the show there's a QR code with Venmo that you can purchase a book and then contact me for delivery.
And one can come to the reception free?
Yes. Oh, yes, it's free. We'd love to see everybody there. And if you come, you'll be able to listen and take a walk and take a tour of all the photos.
Add that to your beautiful Sunday plans because it's going to be partly sunny. Just a chance of showers, high near 83. So Fountain Street should be full viewing your work. How do we find out more information, Diane Carroll Burdick?
You can actually go to my Facebook page, Diane Carroll Burdick, or Instagram, same name, or my email is dianecb@comcast.net.
You know I take a picture of you as a guest.
Yes.
That puts a lot of pressure on me.
No problem.
I just ask you to smile. Okay. Diane Burdick, thank you.
Thank you, Shelley.
In 2019, when Academy Award-winning producer and educator Melissa Burton took the stage to accept her Oscar and declared a period should end a sentence, not a girl's education, she received applause, generated international media attention, and sparked a global conversation. Hence, we talk about what's been happening since much. 2019 seems like a day ago, but more than that. Founder, executive director of the PAD Project is our conversation and more. Melissa on the line. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here.
Hope you kind of feel the same way. These years go by quickly, I think, about 2019. But look what happened between 2019 and 2026, and I hope good things have happened in your life.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, you, of course, Academy Award-winning producer and educator is a conversation in itself with your Oscar, but yet you do have a conversation to share with us. Set up what we are to discuss, Melissa.
Thank you. I'll go back to that lovely introduction. It is true that when I received the Academy Award for our film, period, end of sentence, I said what is the PAD Project's tagline, a period should end a sentence, not a girl's education. And the reason I said that is that one in four students around the world misses school because she can't access the products that she needs to manage menstruation. So I am a high school teacher, and when my students and I had the privilege of learning this and traveling to the United Nations, we decided we were going to do something about what is now called period poverty, which is simply the lack of access to hand washing facilities, reproductive and education about one's own body and products to manage menstruation. We did not know about that. We determined this was in 2013 that we actually learned about this, and we determined that we were going to make a documentary to educate people about this fact. And lo and behold, several years later, and it's now several years after that, this conversation is taking root, and I'm glad to see that a lot of states in the United States are taking action with different policy, and most recently, India has declared menstrual health a right to life and education, which is in the Supreme Court of India declared that, which is just remarkable, and they prefaced it with that tagline we were just talking about.
Yeah.
So we're really proud of that at the PAD Project.
Yes. Yeah. Let's spend just one moment on that in this landmark. I mean, just January 30th, 2026 decision. This recognized access to menstrual hygiene as a constitutional right. India's Supreme Court with this ruling. Yes.
Yes. It is a very landmark decision and one that we would love to see all countries follow suit. Of course, every country is set up differently, but what a wonderful way to make sure that women and girls are afforded the right to life and dignity given the natural biological process of menstruation.
Yes, there is actually, and we're going to be blunt about this, as we should, there is a menstrual health month, which is this month of May, and a menstrual health day, which is May 28th.
That is correct.
How do we spend these? I trust we talk about it. And what would happen possibly on a menstrual health day?
Well, we look forward. The PAD project is a part of a coalition with other WASH. WASH stands for sanitary health, and the we are with other organizations to just spread the word that menstruation is not should not be stigmatized. It should be normalized, that women and girls should have access to the products and education that they need, whatever those are. WASH is water, sanitation, and hygiene. And so we're part of a coalition around the world to mark Menstrual Health Day and Menstrual Health Month at a time when we make sure that half the world's population is afforded the opportunity to be a full citizen, regardless of whether or not she gets her period.
Tell us more, if you would, Melissa Burton, B-E-R-T-O-N, founder and executive director of the PAD Project. You say it's still called the PAD Project, or has taken on a different name?
It is called the PAD Project. That is the name of our nonprofit and the name of which you can find online and anywhere. We work in 7 countries and in the United States. We've delivered close to 5 million products around the world. We're very proud. And the name of the film is called Period, End of Sentence. And our 26-minute documentary is available on Netflix and YouTube.
Tell me more about what we see.
So the 26-minute documentary records the placement of a man, an inventor named Murugan Anthem, who invented a sanitary pad-making machine in which women can manufacture pads from locally sourced material and then sell them much more cheaply than they could be. And the film happens to be set in a very rural area, a rural village north of Delhi. And the film documents how the machine arrives in the village, the women working on the machine, how menstruation is destigmatized in that village. The men even start to make pads. At first, they think it's a diaper-making machine. And eventually, the people in the village become used to the machine as a means of employment, as a means of destigmatizing menstruation. And it's a very uplifting 26-minute film. They make pads that they name fly pads because they want women to soar. This is a village in Katikera in northern India.
What do you need from, well, our U.S. of A. communities? How can we help here in Michigan with, well, celebrating this month and working to achieve goals such as you have done?
Thank you so much. So you can visit us at www.thepadproject.org and find ways to normalize period conversations about periods. Of course, donations are always welcome. We can't possibly meet the demands that we have here in the United States, where we partner across all 50 states. Here in Los Angeles, where I'm calling from, we just recovered from the wildfires, and period products, menstrual supplies, are an often forgotten measure of relief along with food during disaster. So we're proud to have raised money for over 450,000 pads and products for people who need them after the wildfire. So in times of disaster, for poverty, for domestic abuse shelters, refugee centers across all 50 states, we give hundreds of thousands of products away and we still cannot meet demand. So anything you can do to spread the word, normalize conversation, donate, host a screening, all of Period, End of Sentence, all of that is wonderful.
All right, one more time, best way to find out more information.
www.thepadproject.org.
Thanks for what you do. Hold that Oscar close to your heart and, well, keep up your good work. Melissa Burton, again, The Pad Project, period, end of sentence, your documentary, and more. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Ken Shipley on the line. He's a big deal. We'll see him today through today. 1 to 7, head to Art Rat. Let's talk about why we should care. Because if you can say yes to the question, dig great music in classic formats, well, the Numero Group is for you. It's a pop-up. That's a big introduction to you. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Of course, Art Rat Gallery, strong in our own backyard under the leadership of Matthew Rothenberg. Ken Shipley, co-founder of the Numero Group. What are you all about?
We're an archival record label that focuses on music that didn't really get a good shine the first time around. We repackage it in a variety of different antiquated and modern formats, including, you know, anything from a playlist to a cassette and everything there in between.
Ah, the many cassettes we still have, as they say. Where's home base for you, Ken?
Well, I'm in Los Angeles. The company has offices in Chicago, LA, New York, and London.
Yes. And why Art Rat Gallery to see you today from 1 to 7?
We take this little, like, rolling record store on the road several times a year, and we're always looking for interesting spaces in towns that are maybe not like the biggest cultural center in an area, but have an enormous amount of people that love music. And like, you know, we have an enormous catalog, over 750 imprint titles currently, that can't really be stocked by any one record store. And so our goal is always to try to like take all the rare things from our warehouse, the out of print bits, the bestsellers, all the merch and everything, and bring it to people and give them the opportunity to see what we do in real time.
Wonderful. And I guess be more, I'll get the address here in a second. It's on Division, the wonderful Art Rat Gallery. But will the 1 to 7 time be my time frame?
1 to 7 p.m., yeah. We'll open up, and we take all forms of payment, and we have friendly people here to recommend you obscure music that you've never heard of.
It's cool. Yes, located on 46 South Division is Art Rat Gallery. How do you know? Well, first of all, let me go back to why you're called the Numero Group.
Well, it's the Spanish word for number. And every single record in the Numero catalog has a number attached to it. And it's the kind of record label that no matter what we put out, it's going to be interesting. And a lot of people try to collect the entire thing, including a guy in a shout out from Grand Rapids named Kev Bosky, who's one of our best customers. And he has probably the largest complete collection in Numero, which is, I think, almost 950 total titles now.
Wow. And we are part of, it looks like, a pop-up tour, as you mentioned, that you're doing here in the Midwest and beyond?
Yeah, we generally kind of take these out for a week at a time. This one, we're just a little 3-day stint on our way out to New York, where we're opening a store for the entire summer.
And this is somewhat of a drop-in 1 to 7. Is there a way I can peruse what you may be offering, or is it best I just come in person and take my time?
Best to come in person and take your time, but if you want to get clued up on what we're about, www.numerogroup.com or at the Numero Group on Instagram and other various social platforms.
Nice. Again, Ken Shipley is with us, co-founder out of L.A., presenting the work of, well, great music in classic formats under the Numero Group pop-up in on the great grounds of Art Rat Gallery, of course, today from 1 to 7. I'm looking at the website of Art Gallery, actually artratgallery.com. What's a Duster Cat?
Duster is probably the best-selling artist on Numero. They're a 1990s space rock outfit that had an enormous amount of success in the TikTok era around 2020. And they have this album that has this really unique and some kind of, say, maybe ugly cat on the cover of it, and it's sort of become a little bit of a mascot for the label. We have this enormous inflatable version of him, and we also sell little stuffed animals and stickers and pins. We're a cat-friendly label for sure.
And then you also say, shirts, hats, duster cats, and dingers galore. Tell me about dingers galore.
Dingers are when a record falls off a shelf and gets a kind of a crushed corner, or, you know, the shrink wrap gets torn off, or, you know, a packing knife goes through the back cover or something like that. And we take those records and we mark them down and we sell them really cheap to people who aren't condition freaks.
One could just come in and ask a lot of questions and you would provide the answer, Ken.
I encourage it. Please come and see us 1 to 7 p.m., 44-46 South Division.
Wonderful. All right. Looking forward to that. Ken, stay the course. Thanks for choosing Grand Rapids and, of course, Art Rat Gallery from 1 to 7. Hang out and get your classic music in the form that is best for you. One more time, best way to find out more information about you?
NumeroGroup.com or at the Numero Group on all socials.
Great. Thanks for the reach out, Matthew Rothenberg, on behalf of Art Rat Gallery. Still likes just saying that name, Art Rat. Take care, Ken.
Thank you.
Your inspiration for the day, according to Theodore Roosevelt, do what you can with what you have where you are. Let's start yesterday. I hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great weekend. I'm Shelley Irwin.